Skyden listening to the Weepy Voice Killer. Not to be confused with the Creepy Voice Killer, which is what I accidentally said the first time we tried recording. All right, bro. It's been over 2 years. What'd you think about your performance?
I liked it. I think there were some like moments where I kind of see I was a lot more comfortable. Like, I've noticed this go around where as we're kind of dipping back into the recording process, I'm having to find my legs again. And I feel like out the gate, like, I think that was my first standalone episode. And it was just like dove right in, you know, almost overconfident. Like, one of the things that, like, immediately one of the notes I wrote down was, or not maybe immediately, but I noticed like the overconfidence, like, yeah, I think he probably had schizophrenia.
Yeah.
As if I were qualified to know what the guy had.
Well, I have to say, my very first note of the episode was I was really nervous about recording you like over the phone. And at the end, I said video, pull you up on video. I can't remember exactly how we recorded you, but maybe it was like Facebook Live or something. But honestly, the way that your voice sounded and putting the creepy music box music underneath you, somehow it ended up working for me.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is we have recently discussed trying to put that kind of effect on a recording to add a creepy vibe. I think we both forgot that happened because at the time we recorded it, you were unhappy with it.
Correct.
But now, a few years removed, it sounds like super duper like, I don't know. It gives it that old retro sound.
So what Lucas is talking about is I got a record player for my birthday. And one of the things that I had forgotten about when I was a kid, and this was a little probably before Lucas's time, since there's 7 years between us, whenever I was like stayed at home and sick or something like that, when my mom would go to the pharmacy to go get the medicine, I remember flipping through the records at the pharmacy, and she would like usually let me get like a Spider-Man album or something. And you would put the record on, and it had a comic book that you could follow along with while the record was playing. And I was wondering the other day if, like, maybe they had made records that were of the horror persuasion. And so I started getting on eBay, and I was finding some, and I was kind of, like, checking them out on YouTube.
Right.
First, to see if it would be something that I was interested in. And listening to those old creepy voices, it was pretty interesting. Matter of fact, I think I'll insert one of those right now.
This is Nelson Olmsted. Sleep no more. Sleep no more. Turn down the lights. Sink back in your chair and don't look into the shadows. In the shadows, there may be moving things. Tonight, it may be... you will sleep no more.
So, hopefully you guys liked that.
Yeah, that was freaking cool.
Actually, we didn't even hear anything. I'm going to go back and add it later.
That's so funny.
Anyway, yeah, so I had the creepy music. I had your voice. The audio tracks that we ended up adding. And that was all like completely your idea because I would just ran with your notes. But as I was listening to it today, I almost felt like you were there witnessing the things that were happening, narrating it. And then the audio tracks were almost like, I don't know how to explain it.
I think it brought it to life. Because I think with the ambiance created with the kind of the voice sounding a little distorted and the music and the music bed you created, and then you have those calls coming in and out and the narration, I think it just creates this perfect effect where you're kind of immersed into that situation, those individual cases. And kind of something to that point, I also jotted down as we were listening, I am obsessed with bullet points. And that's one of the reasons why it was done that way. Victim one, victim two, because my mind has to organize that.
It was a bullet point, yeah.
I'm a bullet pointer.
Nice. Was it not obvious to everyone that whenever he called for help after being bashed in the head with a bottle that it was totally the Weepy Voice Killer?
Dude.
I totally need your help right now. I'm all beat up.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that because this is not like it's been a while since I've listened. So some of it's not as fresh or I kind of forgot some of the details. When I'm listening again, it kind of all comes back. And I remember having that thought every time I hear it. It's like, dude, you didn't even try to hide your voice. I don't think you could help it. I worked with a guy one time who did that. In fact, I used to call him Weepy Voice. Like, not to his face, but I used to call – because he would, like, get so upset. And he'd be like, oh, man, I'm just so stressed out. And I thought he was crying. I would think, that dude's a crybaby. But that's just the way – like, his voice would get high-pitched when he was, like, under duress.
Yeah, that's –
it's weird.
I don't even know how to comment on that. I don't think I could listen to it.
The coworker?
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally patient with people, and I'm totally calm compared to how I used to be, but that's like some – I just totally imagine slapping the fucking spit out of this guy's mouth just – I don't know.
Interestingly, I saw him get beat up.
Oh, that's the guy?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, tell the story.
Okay, so one day I'm coming to work. It's about 7 in the morning, and I'm on the street called Navigation. That doesn't really matter what it's called. Anyway, I'm coming into work. The parking lot to my job is on this main road, and it's a one-way road. Or I guess there's a median. Anyway, there's two-way traffic. There's a median. I'm coming from one side, and as I'm waiting to turn left into the parking lot, I notice this Mustang kind of idling forward, and it's weird because there's a truck in front of it, a black pickup truck, and it's idling backwards, like they're slowly coming towards each other. And I'm like, what the hell's going on there? And right about that time, a guy hops out of the black pickup truck and just runs up on the guy in the Mustang and just starts pummeling him in the face. And I'm like, oh, damn, I can't believe I'm witnessing a fight right now. And it's like a road rage thing going down right in front of me, right? And so I see the guy, his nose is all busted up, and he's like freaking out, and he's moving his head around trying to dodge these like blows, and he still has his hand on the wheel. And I see this split second, like, it's weird because me and this dude, like, he happens to meet my eyes, and he has this like look of like utter like frantic panic, and he's just like, and at that split moment, I realize it's my coworker. And I'm like, holy shit, what did he do?
Did he call in late?
Dude, he freaking sped off. Like, he like hopped the curb, popped a tire, and he's like, and then the truck went after him. And about 15 minutes later, like, I walk in the office. I'm like, hey, so-and-so's going to be late. I just saw him getting his ass whooped. And they're like, what? And then about like 15 minutes later, he calls from the parking lot. He's like weeping. Like, oh! And like the cops are there. And he's like, they beat the shit out of me. And it was nuts, man.
That's a pretty great day.
It was crazy.
Do you have any notes? Because I've got like a few more here, but
I do have several. So I think one of the things that stuck out to me is his calls became notably more belligerent. Like at first, and it kind of touches on what I said in the original episode, but he seemed to be dealing with like an inner struggle. Like he would do these things, and he said it like, oh, well, killing was kind of a part of life to me. And it was like he would feel compelled to do it, like almost like driven. He couldn't control it. And then afterwards, he would kind of come back to his reality, or not his reality, but to reality, and he would immediately feel guilty. But then it also is – I can't tell if this guy was a psycho or a simpleton, because some of those calls, he sounds like a upset child. Or at that last interview, he's like, oh, I had a chance to make a friend. Like, and I said it in the first episode, but who thinks like that? Like, it just doesn't sound like a sound-minded adult.
You know what I mean? That was one of the things I wrote down, too, was the comment where he asked himself, what are you doing? I mean, you had a chance to make a friend here. Like, dude, you got to play with her titties. And then you just fucking did that.
You stabbed her. Like, yeah. Like,
whose mind, which guy's mind works in that way where, I don't know.
It almost made me think of a person like the playground, the playground crush where you like a girl and you put dirt in her hair or something. You know, it's like his mind was that basic, but then also, like I said, I just can't tell if he was simple or psychotic.
Well, there was one website that I was going to share later, but I'll go ahead and touch on point number 6. The title of this website was called Mark of a Killer, 6 Disturbing Details About Weepy Voice Killer Murders, and it's on therap.com. But on number 6, they actually said the voice is in his head. And that kind of caught my attention because in the episode, you gave him the, what was it?
The
diagnosis?
The armchair.
Schizophrenic?
The armchair diagnosis.
You might have actually nailed it. Because this says, when reporters spoke to Stefania about his after his conviction, he told them that he would hear voices telling him to kill. Quote, "There was somebody telling me, Paul, it's time to kill." He said during the killing of Greening, he felt like he was playing a game. He would be smiling and a few seconds later ask himself, "What are you doing? She's dying." He himself didn't understand why he would pick someone up at a restaurant and then 15 minutes later stab them.
I mean, that's baffling to me because I have a hard time. When I was a single guy, I had a hard time getting a girl to go on a date with me. This dude in 15 minutes is picking her up, like getting her to trust him and then killing the shit out of her.
Well, it was also a different time.
Yeah, that's true.
Pre-AIDS.
Pre-AIDS?
Yeah.
I don't know why that made me laugh. It's not funny.
Yeah, AIDS isn't funny.
Yeah.
Oops. Especially when it happens to babies.
Ooh,
okay.
Oh, wow.
Sorry, that was a total bite off of Nick Swartzen comedy.
I was like, whoa, Africa? What?
Well, Nick Swartzen didn't say AIDS. He said suicide.
Oh.
He said suicide's not funny, especially when it happens to babies. And then he starts with a story.
I'm sad now.
I was watching my friend's baby the other day, and I ran him a bath, and I went outside to play video games, and when I came back, the baby was dead. It had drowned himself. There was no note. Just a selfish act.
Well, I want to know why one would go outside to play video games.
Just part of a comedy story. We're just playing, guys. Okay, so during the episode, I made a note that I'm glad that we tend to overshare, which is kind of like a staple of the show. We tell things that we probably should never say, especially to the entire world. But in this, in a kind of a weird way, the show has kind of become like a, I don't know what you call it, but we're basically documenting our lives like over like the last few years. And it's kind of cool to be able to go back and listen to you describe what you had just went through with the birth of a new baby and what the doctors are telling you and stuff like that. And, you know, it's, you know, I have four biological kids, and, you know, I kind of wish I would have had that myself, you know, because that was 20 years ago.
Shit.
And looking back, I couldn't tell you what me and the doctors talked about. I couldn't tell you what the problems were. I couldn't tell you what it was like to, you know, be trying to do a hobby and balance a newborn at the same time. So I thought it was pretty cool.
That is a good point. And I think what it is, it's a chronicle. It chronicles what was going on at that time.
Yeah, I think that's the word. What do you call it whenever you bury something and then you time capsule?
Yes.
It's almost like that too. Going back 2 years after the fact and listening. It's almost like we're getting to crack open our own personal time capsule. And yeah.
I feel like you should cut in with sending out an SOS at this part.
What the hell?
I don't know, because you just like message to yourself, message in a bottle. My brain just went that route.
Yeah, I don't think it was SOS. Message in a bottle.
I went to sting.
Let's see. Oh yeah, guys, don't pay attention to any of the mentions about Patreon, Facebook, or websites or any of that stuff. All that's going to change or has changed, and we're going to be updating you of all that in future episodes. Matter of fact, I'll probably even just record like a 1 minute public service announcement PSA. Once all that happens. Yeah, and just put it out there for you guys. But we are kind of excited. Like, we want to start interacting with you guys and answering emails, and Lucas is doing social media, like we've mentioned before, and all that will be coming to pass. And when it does, we'll let you know.
Yeah, so. I just created the Facebook, like literally as we were listening to Weeby Boys.
Oh, well, so. Do you want to go ahead and put that out there?
Yeah, so we're right now currently the only social media that's up is Funtime Horror Show on Facebook. Funtime is two separate words, not ran together. The default says Funtime Horror Show, you kill them, we just talk about it. So look for that profile. I'm going to start getting it active. And yeah, we'll keep this thing rolling. I have an Instagram that I used for the original FTHS. I just need to get back on there, reactivate it, and put current info. So I'll get that done.
Before I do the six disturbing things about Weeby Voice Killer, which I already did number six, but you said one thing in there that I really liked that I'm surprised didn't become like a catchphrase or a slogan. You said, "Don't be a fan of us, be a fan with us." I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was cool too. I was like, good job, 2020 Lucas. I agree. And I think that we should keep that mentality because, you know, it's keeps us from being arrogant and it keeps the show fresh because we're not trying to like.
Are we good enough to be arrogant?
Yes. I didn't even say it like I believed it.
All right, dude. Six things. Unless you got something else you want to talk about. You got any notes?
I have some notes, but they're I think we pretty well covered.
It's probably dumb.
Yeah,
it's probably dumb notes.
Stupid.
Stupid, Lucas.
No.
Yeah. Be ashamed of yourself. What the fuck? So, number one, his bizarre phone calls. Okay, after he killed 18-year-old Kimberly Compton, Stefani called 911 and told them, I can't stop myself. I keep killing everybody, and I don't know why I had to stab her. I'm so upset about it. Okay, obviously, you already covered all that. So, let's go to number two, the brutality of his crimes. This first one, whenever he killed Compton with an ice pick, he stabbed her 61 times. Number three, this one, I don't know if you did know. You definitely didn't cover it. But the wrong guy confessed to the murders. 2 months after Compton's death, police were called to a scene where a man named Alan Lopez was holding his family hostage. During the negotiations, he told investigators he was the individual who was responsible for the murder of Kimberly Compton. It turns out he had a history of mental illness and assault. When he took his own life and no calls were coming into the police offices for 6 months, police had actually thought that they had the right guy. But soon a paperboy found a body, in Minneapolis, and a call came in which also referenced Compton. Very quickly, police realized that Lopez had not been the Weepy Boys killer. So probably for a while, they just gave up. And they were like, oh, okay, the motherfucker's dead. Number four, the way that he was caught, which you touched on, but basically he ended up calling in to, I guess, 911. And needed assistance, saying that he had been the victim of a robbery gone wrong. And number five, his strange demand a decade after his conviction. About a decade after he was sentenced to 40 years in prison, Stefani reached out to Corcoran, saying if he does him one favor, he'll tell him everything. His demand was simple. He simply wanted a picture of the stone at his mother's grave. So investigators granted this wish, and Stefani confessed to the assault and murders, and also confessed to another murder. He just couldn't remember any detail that would lead the law enforcement to identify the victim. All he said was that he remembered finding her in a bathtub. It says that's when investigators searched through their archives of victims dying in bathtubs, and they found Kathleen Greening. One difference in his case was that Stefani never called in about this crime, like his other crimes. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I briefly touched on her at the end of that one.
You did. We even had the clip.
Yeah, the Kathleen Greene. Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember the one reading the one about the guy who mistakenly confessed, but I did want to say props to the lady who the prostitute. She was pretty tough.
Oh yeah.
She broke a bottle over his head and fought back and whooped his ass, which is pretty impressive. I think that that's pretty well, on top of it being really cool that she saved her own life, she pretty well brought him to justice on accident.
Well, and if you don't have anything else to say, that will bring me to my next personal story.
Yes.
So, as you guys may or may not know, I have a wife. Her name is Stacy. She will be featured on a few of the episodes that you guys are going to hear in the archives, maybe even some future new episodes. But her role at the company that she works for is all revolves around getting people jobs. So one day she's talking to this guy, and people tend to open up during their interview process. And in the process of his interview, he's telling her about how he doesn't have any family, he doesn't have any friends around. And Stacy said, well, that's bad to hear, but let's work on getting you a job. And whenever we get you on board, if you have any problems or anything like that, you can always feel free to reach out to me and I'll help steer you in the right direction. Well, he ends up turning down the job but takes her offer to be there for him, takes her up on his offer and begins sending her pictures of his dick. So obviously she's going to go ahead and block that number. And the next day, after he realizes that his number has been blocked, he starts borrowing phones from other people and sending her message, calling her a dirty slut, telling her that it's fucked up that she said that she would always be there for him and that he blocked her, that she blocked her number. And what he's going to do is go and pick up some other bitch and choke the shit out of her since he can't choke her directly. Needless to say, it made her very upset. She called me almost all day, crying in tears, having a really hard time with this, saying that she doesn't feel safe. Obviously, she works from home, so she's here by herself. And in order to make her feel better, I stopped on the way home and bought her a new 9mm. And then I took her Saturday to go shoot. And I have to say, she's a better shot than I am.
Nice.
So all I want to say is to the guy that decided to send these pictures and to send these threats to my wife, you know who you are, if you're listening. If you come up in this house, you're going to end up leaving with more holes than you showed up with.
Ouch.
With that said, I'm ready to get on to Lamora Williams.
Let's get on to Lamora Williams.
All right, cool. Well, we'll go ahead and cut this one short, and until we see you again for Lamora Williams.
Protect your booty.